Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
And so here we are, Mr. Parry.
Yes.
Once more into the breach. We have, of course, passed a long time ago 1 million listens on the record.
I think you'll
record.
Find we've passed two.
We have now passed 2 million.
Indeed.
As you will know from the way that you know the theatre and the world of drama,
yes.
I was building up to that.
Oh, you were?
You've now just completely stamped all over
it. Sorry, I like to get straight to the
point. Yeah, I know, but that's why you don't understand the whole point
of
what can be described as, you know, sort of building the tension.
Bellocchio's
building the tension. Do you know, actually, we are the two mics, of course, by the way, and this is on the record. With Audio Boom.
Yeah.
Do you know when John Witherow, who was the
I know John very well.
Of the Sunday Times before he was editor of the Times.
Yes.
When he would have his conferences on a sort of Tuesday afternoon, as they would always begin to have them.
That's right.
As they start the long, drawn-out process of what are we going to put in the fucking
paper
this week.
To a paper for Sunday, that's right, yeah.
And then they throw all the ideas away by Thursday and start again.
Yeah.
His favourite phrase, apparently, and I never sat in any of these conferences, but I knew people who did.
Yeah.
His favourite phrase was after the news editor had gone through the sort of, you know, we've got this great story we're working on, something to do with, you know, the background of the Whitehall scandal.
That's right.
Do you know what his question was?
They were going to Borneo.
His big question always was, where's the tension?
Where's the tension?
In this story. Which would put absolute frighteners on every news editor. Because if there wasn't any tension in the story, it meant that they didn't like it.
Where's the tension? I don't like it. Well, I know another Sunday newspaper editor, right? He used to intimidate all his people. As you're absolutely right, they used to get in on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But all they did was go out and get pissed Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
And then by Friday, had to start putting a paper together.
Well, because you quite rightly say, if you start writing a story on Tuesday, the editor sees it on Wednesday, by the time Friday's come around, he starts saying things like, this is an old story.
I've seen this.
I've read
an old story.
This. I've been
reading
all bloody week.
Yeah, well, anyway, this is Bernard Trimsley, right? Bernard Trimsley was a great gentleman.
One of the last great gentlemen editors.
One of the last great gentlemen editors. I hated him because he hated me, because he thought I was unsophisticated.
Well, to be honest, a lot of people did hate
me. A lot of people did hate me, and I was... I was too rough and ready in the newsroom, shouting across the newsroom at people, demanding their copy and telling them they were effing useless and all this kind of stuff, you know what I mean, if they didn't get in on time. So we used to sit in the evening conference at 4 o'clock, and as I ran through the news list and all that, he'd pick holes in every one of them.
Yeah.
And I turned around to him more morning ago and said, Bernard, have you got any fucking ideas then to try and help out what we're going to put in the paper tomorrow?
How instead very of picking, diplomatic of you.
Yeah, instead of picking all my ideas to pieces, why don't you come up with something? I said, you sit around here all day doing bugger all, with your feet on the... I don't even know what you do. What do you do here? Then I turned to the editor, Nick Lloyd, Sir Nicholas Lloyd, and said, Nick, what's this guy doing here?
Yeah.
And of course, the answer was that Bernard Trimsey used to employ Nick Lloyd years ago at the News of the World.
Yes.
So, the old gravy train goes round, Bernard gets laid off, you know, and Nick takes him on as associate editor, pays him a huge salary in those days of 65 or 70 grand to do nothing, and it's the old boys' club, you know.
Didn't they make him the ombudsman or some bollocks?
Yeah, made him the ombudsman.
Which means that anybody complains, in the days before there was a sort of press complaints commission,
something like
he
that,
would handle all the complaints.
That's right, yeah, and just tell people we're looking
but
into it.
But by and large, he would also, I mean, it's quite an important role that he actually fulfilled, because what he would also do was take people out to lunch that the editor didn't want to take out for lunch.
Yes, that's right.
So he would just say, oh, Bernard, so so-and-so's coming today.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just going to tell him, I'm far too busy. Yeah, yeah. Would you just take her out? Don't worry, I'll pay for it.
That's right, I'm going to play golf at lunchtime, so you do the work.
I can't bother seeing this particular person.
That's right, but anyway, a mate of mine called Johnny Jinks was the news editor of the News of the World when Bernard was the editor, and John...
Oh, I didn't know Johnny was at the News of the World.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Because I remember he was at the time,
No, he was at the News of the World, and he went from the News of the World to... This is before the Express, and then Arliss Rhine, who was the news editor of the Express, and it was all a big boys' club, decided he wanted to step down
as Scots at news one point,
editor. Yeah, a lot of Scots around, yeah. And he rang up Jenny and said, Jenny, I'm stopping down this news today. Get in here, son. That's right. I'll recommend you to be my replacement. And John was the laziest bastard I've ever met. I mean, John did 6 hours drinking a day and 2 hours news editing. Right. You know, it's a standard procedure in those days.
You managed
to
perfect that to 4 and 4. Didn't you managed to perfect that to 4 and 4.
I did, actually. Yeah. John would often, by the way, when he was at news out of the Daily Express, we'd have a few drinks in the Poppin' Jay downstairs after work. And I was just a humble reporter then, so it was great to be invited into his company.
Yes.
But he saw something in me, you know what I mean? Something of the
guy that I could spend a lot of time in the pub with.
Yes, that's right, the dynamic that had become. Yeah. And then he was a great womaniser, John, and he'd have his eye on a secretary or two. There were lots of secretaries around in those days.
Yeah.
And then he would disappear
Is
with the
secretary.
Is
that where you learned your craft?
Well, maybe, I don't know. But then he would disappear with the secretary, the features secretary, trying to remember
his
name.
He's a namer.
No, I can't remember. Alison. And they'd disappear about 10 o'clock, and then... The next day, you would find that he'd got home at 5:30 a.m., you know, after he'd been out on a massive drinking and shagging session.
Right.
Not necessarily with young Alison.
No, okay.
You know, I can't say it was her.
No.
And years later, I got to know John better. Mm. He used to say that, you know, the one thing he always insisted on doing before he left a woman's flat that wasn't his wife was have a shower, because women have so many sorts of different perfumes and things, you know what I mean?
It can
attach to your clothes or anything.
Well,
that's
difficult as well, though, because if you turn up at home having just had a shower... You know, the missus will also know that you've just had a shower.
Yeah, but
he'd ask you why.
He'd say things like, oh, yeah, well, I was playing squash last night, you know, before I had to go to this very important all-night meeting at the Savoy.
So where's your squash clothes?
Yeah, exactly.
It can all lead to very
dangerous places. Anyway, so Johnny was the news editor of the News of the World, and Bernard was the... And so, you know, they'd all get in there for, as you quite rightly say, the first conference of the week, you know. Right, now, what are we doing this week? And then the news editor would go through it, and then a sports editor, a features editor, a woman's editor, fashion editor.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, this is one on for about like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Bernard would just shake his head every week and say, an awful long way to go this week, haven't we?
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was
it. Get up and walk out.
Thereby
you know
not
I mean? Yeah,
invigorating
yeah.
anybody with any great confidence.
Exactly.
I used to go to a meeting on a Monday at the Mail on Sunday with Peter Wright, who was then the editor.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who
still
was
isn't. Oh, no, he's not there. No,
he got the heave-ho. Funnily enough, he was diabetic, though. He had a very unnerving habit of keeping hobnobs in his drawer.
Right.
And if he was getting a bit bored with anybody and whatever they were saying, he was in danger of going into a diabetic coma.
Right.
So he'd reach into the drawer and start eating hobnobs.
Yeah, see, I don't understand that, because I'm diabetic, but I have to go the other way. I have to cut down on the amount of sugar I put into my body.
Yeah.
My old uncle Alex, who died years ago, he was diabetic, and he just used to, when he got a diabetic coma, he'd go wandering off down the street.
But isn't
and
the point about
him?
Diabetes that if you have diabetes, it means you have one low blood sugar, but also you have no way of processing the insulin.
Yeah, I think that's it,
which is why you have to put insulin into your body.
Yeah.
But I think if you get low blood sugar, because I knew a guy, God, you remember him, John King.
Yeah.
He used to be the Bristol man.
That's right,
John,
yeah.
He was the guy who got me into the NUJ, National Union of Journalists, many years ago. But he had a wife who was diabetic.
Right.
And whenever we were out with them, she used to carry like croissants around in
her
bag.
Okay,
in case she suddenly felt the need to have something to eat. So you don't need to do that then?
No, I do. I have to go the other way. I have to stop eating sweets.
Well, maybe it's because you never actually get to the point where your blood sugar is low.
I don't know. No.
Because you're constantly, you know, probably having a pint of beer or a glass of wine.
Well, my latest count is very good. It's down to 5.2.
Yeah.
When I first went in to see Dr. Ahmed? Yeah, the man who said, Mr. Parry, I do not have to examine you because I'm a regular listener of Talk Sport.
Yeah.
And I know that only one third of your heart works. And then told me the next minute
That's
when he
great.
Pricked my finger and blood came out, oh, bloody hell, you're going to have a stroke, you know, because my blood
he
sugar levels
panic a bit, didn't he?
Was so high. Yeah.
But anyway, well, that's all good. Now, I've got one more thing to tell you about former editors and sort of named friends of ours and or enemies. Roy Greenslade, you remember well, who's now a professor of journalism.
How do you become a professor of journalism?
I think you just asked to be one.
You do. I'm going to become a professor of journalism.
I was actually asked.
You don't go
to
university, you know, and take a professorship.
No. I was actually asked by somebody if I wanted to be a professor of journalism at Bournemouth University.
You're joking.
I'm not joking.
How long ago was that?
Just quite recently, because one of my friends used to lecture there.
Bollocks.
No, it's not a load of bollocks.
I know loads of people down in Bournemouth, mate, and they don't need people like you at the university.
Well, no, they do, because they've got a very big media school there.
My family actually put up students from Bournemouth University and student digs.
Yeah, but none of your family are journalists, are they? Including you, by the way.
Well, me, of course.
Well, apart from you, it's not as if you've got some kind of fucking heritage of journalism in your family.
Oh, really?
Have you got any other members of your family who are journalists?
Just get on
your sister's not a journalist down there.
Just get on.
Their husband's not a journalist. Their son's not a journalist. Their daughter's not a journalist.
But talking about Bournemouth, I had to give up on a trip out to the Napoleon Fort this week.
No, what, that horrible looking island in the middle of the Solent.
Yeah, well, they built them to keep Napoleon away. Do you know what it's like building those forts in the 1700s, 1800s?
Well, it can't have been easy. Is it like the same size all the way down?
Yeah.
You know, is it like a big cylinder?
They had to have,
I don't even understand how you could build something in the water.
100 ships dropping rocks into the water. That's what you had to do. And you built on top of that.
Really?
Yeah. It was amazing. It would take years to build them.
Yeah, yeah.
Years, yeah.
So it's turned into a hotel now, isn't it?
It's a hotel and restaurant, and I bought a passage for four.
Right.
That was me and companion, plus my sister and brother-in-law.
Who's companion?
Well, I would have chosen a companion. There's
plenty
of them
taken?
Around. Well, I can't say. But
there's some bird down there. You haven't told anybody about.
No, I'm not getting into that. So we set out about 9 months ago.
Yeah.
Went across the...
I remember you telling me about
went,
this.
Went across the... through Portsmouth Harbour, across the Solent.
And you were on a little speedboat or something.
Yeah, right? It was a speed. It was a launch. And as we were going towards the Napoleonic Fort, you know, the waves were getting bigger and bigger and the boat was tossing around.
Right.
So when we got up to the edge of the fort, you have to come in across the jetty and then grab the iron ladder which you have to climb to get on. Anyway, guy tried it three times. The third time, the boat raised up on a wave, smashed. My brother-in-law,
got like a proper stairway?
No, my brother-in-law, who was seasick and nearly fell overboard.
Dear God.
I mean,
that's awful.
Had to turn around and come back, so I never got onto the Napoleonic Fort.
But you still got the thing to use then?
It's been used this week now. I made sure the people have used it, so that's okay.
Yeah, no, just the one final thing I want to mention about Rory Greenslade is, as you know, he's a professor of journalism at City University, which I think he's retired from pretty soon.
Well, I'm not surprised. He's been around a long time.
Anyway, right, there's a piece on Twitter, I think it was.
Yes.
From a, do you remember a guy called Mitchell McLaughlin? From Sinn Féin. I'm pretty sure he used to be in the IRA.
No, I'm not.
But
he's
a name that's familiar to me. I think he was president of Sinn Féin or something. Anyway, he's just been made, and you'll love this, right, with your knowledge of Northern Ireland, he's just been made Professor of Peace, right, at some fucking university like the Queen's in Belfast,
like Ulster or something.
Well, I think it might be Queen's in Belfast, which is a very good university. But, you know, Professor of Peace from a guy who used to be associated with the IRA.
Yeah, that's right.
And or certainly Sinn Féin.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh. But Roy Greenslade sends him a note from one professor to another.
No.
Congratulations, mate.
No.
I was thinking, you fucking twat.
Yeah, honestly, Greenslade, what a twat. And by the way, talk about, you know, anomalies of people's titles. Yeah. That's like Tony Blair appointing himself as Middle East peace negotiator.
That's right.
Well, you only smashed up fucking Iraq, didn't you? You only helped Afghanistan to fall
first
apart.
First, I'm going to go to war. Then, I'm going to be a peace envoy.
I'll be the peace envoy. Now, I've managed to... 350,000 people dead across the Middle East.
Tremendous work.
Was that because George Bush invaded them? Yeah.
Well done, Tony. Did you see, by the way, the weekend, Peter Mandelson was wheeled out of his cupboard? You know, I haven't seen him for years.
Yeah,
No, nothing in particular. He was wheeled out onto Peston on Sunday, which is one of the worst shows I've ever seen
in
my life. Have you seen that Allegra Stratton woman?
No.
Who's his kind of, she used to be on Newsnight, I think.
Right.
And she's now his kind of... I don't know, off to the side, almost like the weather girl.
Yes.
But she compiles all these statistics and things. And I don't wish to be unkind to Allegra Stratton, but she doesn't really have the figure for tight-fitting jeans.
Right, okay.
But that's what she wears.
Right.
Right.
Bit like if you were wearing tight-fitting jeans,
well,
it would look a bit absurd.
Jeans,
no,
nobody would
look
thank
absurd.
Me.
Yeah.
And people would go, what the hell's he doing?
Yeah, that's
right. I'm perfectly well aware of my own failings, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But it doesn't preclude me from making assertions about other people, particularly those on TV.
Mm.
Anyway, Mandy, as he's known, was sitting there waxing very lyrical about the royal wedding and saying, do you know, with his very faux sort of accent that he's got, you know, I'm getting so excited by this wedding that I'm thinking of possibly doing it myself. And they started talking about how he's thinking about getting married to his long-time partner, who I presume is still that Brazilian bloke who he threatened our friends at the Sunday Express
with
killing if they ever exposed
Silvino or somebody.
Something like that.
Didn't he go to... he went to Brazil with him, didn't he? They went to the carnival, Rio Carnival.
I think they might have done. Well,
that's where they came out, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
They might
have been in Japan together or something like that. But, anyway, he then had a conversation with Len McCluskey, who was there... You know,
you mean Red Len?
Red Len. Yeah.
Hey, I'm telling you, I'm Sir Perton Kerman because I'm Red Len, all right? And by the way, thanks very much for buying us that 900 grand flat in Butter High Street.
Yeah, because I like that working class look in London. Yeah, you know. Anyway, he was ranting raving on about Brexit and all that.
Yeah.
And Mandelson accused him of sounding just like the Prime Minister. It's a very odd situation.
Right.
Because here's Mandelson, the arch sort of new Labour guy, and old Labour, Len McCluskey, apparently agree with the Tories. Yeah. Very odd. All very strange.
I mean, Mandelson's most famous, isn't he, for his constituency was Hartlepool.
Yeah.
And he owned a fish and chip shop in Hartlepool. Yeah. And instead of asking for fish, chips and peas, he asked for fish and chips and then pointed to the green stuff and said, is that guacamole?
I'll have some guacamole. Although he claims that's an apocryphal story.
Well, it probably is, but it's a good story.
True, but it is quite
one last
good.
Word about Professor Roy Greenslade. Right?
Yeah.
This is a man, right, who was the deputy to the editor of The Sun for 2 years, who took the Murdoch shilling, who pretended that he was all for the values of The Sun.
Yep.
And then the minute he switched and became the editor of The Daily Mirror, for years, after that, you know, despised Murdoch and
still
attacked
writes
him.
About Murdoch and
still
how awful he is,
writes in his left wing column about the disgraceful, you know, pressure that Murdoch's put on the decent press.
Yes.
If I were you, Roy, I'd shut the fuck up.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
You do know he's also got a very famous stepdaughter, don't you?
Stepdaughter?
Stepdaughter, Natasha McElhone.
McElhone?
Who's an actress, yeah. She used to be in Californication.
I don't know her.
She's his wife's daughter. From a previous marriage.
Oh, right, OK. Well, there was one time, right, when I...
Because his wife's Irish, isn't she?
His wife is... They live in Ireland. They've got a place in Ireland.
Yeah.
So there was one time, and I got close to a lady who worked at the Mirror, right?
You say got close...
Yes, yes.
What do you mean?
Pretty close.
You mean you had an affair with her?
Yes, that's right.
Was she a secretary?
No, she wasn't. Was she was a reporter on the Sunday Mirror. And she's a lovely girl with blonde hair. I can't remember her name.
You can't remember her name?
No, no. But believe it or not...
That's not very nice.
Believe it or not...
Do you think she remembers your name?
Yeah, she would remember my name, but we met on a facility trip to British Honduras.
That's why you went on those trips, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right.
You tried to get your leg out.
So, there was a lot of it, there was a lot of
it. Was that the one you went on Concorde on?
There was one we went on Concorde on, you're absolutely right, And Concorde was parked there for 3 days on the landing strip in British Honduras.
And how about her landing strip?
I'm not going to respond to smutty, you know, innuendos like that. However, we did get close, right? Yeah. And it was quite romantic,
well, on that trip.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You mean it hadn't happened before?
It hadn't happened before.
Really?
Hadn't met her before.
She must have been drinking.
Well, we had an awful lot of drink on board the Concorde, and it takes like only took 2 hours to get from Senegal, where we refuelled, to British Honduras.
That'd be quite unnerving, though.
It was incredible. We're flying at 60,000 feet on the
river. Was the jet lag worse because you were going faster?
We didn't have jet lag. I mean, it was a 3-day drinking session, you know what I mean? And so that's why I think we all got a bit friendly and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But she told me, right, that Greenslade was the editor of the Mirror. And she was coming out the old Mirror building.
Yeah.
And, is that Colmore Circus?
It was Holborn, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Colmore Circus, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right, at the top of Shoe Lane.
Yeah.
And beautiful building, because I used to work there on a Saturday.
It's now Sainsbury's HQ, isn't it?
It is, yeah, you're absolutely right, Murdoch used to land his helicopter on the roof. Maxwell used to land his helicopter on the
roof. Murdoch would have liked to land his helicopter. There was a time when he was going to buy the Mirror, wasn't there?
I don't know, was there?
Way back at the beginning, yeah. When he ended up buying the Sun, I think he was looking at buying the Mirror.
Was he? Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, he bought the Sun, the rest is history. But she said she came out of the building one night and Greenslade just happened to be coming out in his chauffeur-driven car.
Yeah.
And she was a very attractive girl and Greenslade was always on, you know, had an eye for the female form.
Yeah.
He said, oh, would you like a lift? And she said, oh, OK. They were both going to North London.
Mm.
In the back of the car, she told him that, by the way, don't tell anybody that I've given you a lift here, will you? I'm not really supposed to be up here today. And she said, oh, where are you going? Mm. He said, I'm going for a rendezvous.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, oh, really? He said, yes, you know, I'm always open to a rendezvous. It was a kind of warped, you know, look what a great guy I am type of thing, you know. And And then she got out of the car and he, you know, winked and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he was, honestly, he was a piece of rubbish in my view, Greenslade. But there we are. Now, listen, I want to talk to you about...
I'm sure he speaks very highly of you.
Yes, yes. Now, I want to tell you about something I'm quite happy about. I love businesses to do well. But this headline caught my eye,
yes.
Okay?
Go on.
Bike sales racing downhill at Holford's, right? Now, all these half-bakes who dress up in Lycra...
Well, I don't see any reduction in the number of bloody cyclists on the road.
Hang on, put the helmets on, put cameras on the helmets to try and catch out law-abiding motorists, you know, in the way that Jeremy Vine did, because, you know, he was being persecuted by a motorist and all that kind of stuff, right? Halfordshire sped downhill as a cycling boom has lost momentum.
Good.
This is great news.
Yeah.
Profits fell 6% over the past year to 67.1 million. Halford said
that's
sales
still a lot of money, that.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Halford said sales of cycling products rose 2.9% below the 5% rise it anticipated and reported last year.
Right.
The drop is blamed on a poor fourth quarter sales slump. Now, what they're saying is, they're trying to blame it on beasts from the east and all that, but it's absolutely obvious what's going on. Cycling makes up about 40% of Holford sales, but because it buys much of its stock from the US, it's been hit by 25 million quid in extra costs.
Yeah. What, because of the tariffs?
No, because of the differentiation in the pound and the dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
However, my view on this is that all these, you know, half-bakes who decided, ooh, it's fashionable to be cyclists now. Yeah. I'll buy a bike, and I'll buy the Leica, and I'll buy the helmet, and go, they do it for about 3 days or 3 weeks, and then decide, what the bloody hell am I doing, you know, rupturing myself on a seat, you know, the width of a straw, between my legs, hurting my testicles and forcing its way into the areas of my body I don't wish it to.
It's not so much your testicles, it's that rather sort of sensitive part of the body.
Yes.
And between your testicles and the other bit.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into that. Yeah, I don't want to get into that.
But I mean, I don't see any evidence whatsoever for a reduction in the number of cyclists.
I see plenty of evidence of the fact that nobody uses the blasted bike lanes in London.
But you know how in London now there's three different kinds of bikes that you can rent.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because apart from the Boris bikes, which are now Santander rather than Barclays, which are the bulk of them, there's now two other kinds of bikes. One, you might have seen them, they're yellow, right? And they're very, I can't work out how you
people
make them
operate. Just leave them on the street, don't
they? You just leave them on the street. Sometimes they fly flat down. And apparently you must have some kind of card which somehow releases the
Do you tap the card onto something on the bike or something? Like you would in a pub or something?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. I think if you get, I think when you sign up and you join and you've got some kind of card or a key or something, it allows you to free up the actual bike. Without that, it doesn't move.
Right.
But there's another now, a red type of bike, I think it is, which is like the third kind.
Right.
So there's now three different companies with all these bikes. I don't know if you saw on the news a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
There was this massive sort of bike graveyard in China.
Because people
do it all the time, right? And they've got masses of hundreds of bikes all piled up.
It looked
all
like,
of which are perfectly good bikes, but nobody uses them.
It looked like an old coal tip in South Wales where it was piled so high, it was unbelievable.
I know. Yeah. Absolutely staggering. Now, I had an interesting encounter with a cyclist. Actually, not that long ago. Last week, I think it was.
Yeah.
I was going home. I think I'd been with you, filming some stuff for Too Much TV.
Right.
And so I was slightly bladderated, not particularly, but just enough to be, a little short-tempered.
I know.
And I'm going home on the C10 bus down Jamaica Road.
Right.
And this bloody cyclist starts getting a row with the driver.
Right.
Right. And he pulls in front of the driver and stops the bike.
Yeah.
Thereby stopping the bus.
Yeah, that's right.
And the guy's going, get out of the way, get out of the way. Yeah. And he stopped, he takes his camera out, starts filming.
Yeah.
And starts videoing this guy.
Yeah.
I was on the point of going to this driver, like, just open the fucking door, mate, and let me out this guy.
Yeah.
Because everyone was trying to get home.
That's right.
It was about 7 o'clock at night. Yeah. People were tired, they were hot.
Yeah.
This wanker was holding up the
totally
entire bus
intolerant.
And saying, you cut me up, I'm taking your number, I'm taking a video of you.
Yeah.
And it's totally
intolerant.
Off,
this is
man.
A poor bus driver
who
has a very stressful job driving around in London with moaning passengers.
Yeah. And also, he's in a bus lane, not a bike lane.
That's right.
The bike shouldn't even be in the bus lane.
They shouldn't, no.
Twice.
And do you know what? Quite recently, down in Stockbroker Belt, I was just walking on a road and I saw a silver car go past and then I saw a bike furiously pursuing it, you know? It stopped at lights, right, at a junction. The cyclist got off his bike, dropped his bike on the floor and went to the passenger side of the car and started kicking the door in.
Really?
And you know those shoes they wear with a bit of metal underneath?
Yeah, yeah.
They are heavy duty, right? And he's kicking the door in and of course the driver goes and said, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. You know, he said, you bastard, you cut me up, you could have killed me. And kept kicking the door. The driver came after him, he ran, right, picked up his bike, ran off.
Yeah.
And then the driver said, I'm not having this. And he stopped the traffic behind him, turned around and went after him to try and get him. The guy had criminally damaged his car.
I know.
It was an outrage.
Absolutely shocking. Somebody's actually keyed my car, and I don't know whether it's a cyclist who's done it when I wasn't watching. Yeah. But right at the very right back end of the car.
This is not your current car, is it?
Yeah.
My God.
Somebody's put a bloody great line in it. You know, you could only have done it deliberately. It's not, you can, you know,
they
it's,
do
on,
do things
it's on the top half by the, you know, where the hatchback goes.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's on there. And it's one just my, on the corner, and somebody's just gone like that. And it's a really deep gouged scar. Yeah.
One of my early Jags, somebody walked down it with a key, honestly. But do you know what? You don't have to do anything to upset somebody to do that. No. They just don't like you having a nice car.
I wonder whether it was just somebody who didn't like the car.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. And you know, the person who was putting screws under my tyres and that. You know, there are some real evil pieces of filth around in this country.
You're absolutely right.
And, you know, the envy, the laws of envy and all that still apply. Now,
shocking.
Talking about people I don't like, by the way, I want to bring up another one. It's it's that half-bake, and he is a mega half-bake in my view, Brian Blessed.
Oh, I don't mind Brian Blessed.
Oh, I can't stand
Brian
Blessed.
We've had Brian Blessed on our show, you know.
We've had Brian Blessed on our show, but
did we not get him to record something about the 2 months?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I think we did. But he's 81 now, and he's...
Well, leave him alone.
No. For years, he's been writing books and claiming those remarkable things. Like, my life was shaped by the fact that when I was 10, I was out in the park when I saw a distressed woman lying down. I realised she was having a baby. I delivered the baby.
Yeah, it wasn't when he was 10, though, was it?
It was. It was all this time. He says
he's told loads of stories that nobody can ever find out if they're any
true. He told another one about, I didn't get on with the children next door, so I climbed up into the orange tree, which went in their garden. I went into it and I vomited over their mother's head and all this kind of stuff. I mean, he's mad.
Yeah. Outlandish,
ridiculous stories about how he, you know, halfway up Mount Everest with the Dalai Lama, you know, he saw God and all this.
Oh, yeah.
How he's the best mate of the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's his latest, okay?
Yeah.
Asked to confirm whether it's true, he once asked the Dalai Lama about sex. Booming thespian Brian Blessed said, we were both the same age, 55, when we first met. I said... Dali, I'm still as randy as ever.
Dali?
Why would you say that to the Dalai Lama? Who's the Dalai Lama in charge of?
He's in charge of the...
Not
the,
Buddhist, is he? Or?
Well, he's a Buddhist, basically, but he's in charge of Tibet, isn't he, really?
Oh, in charge of Tibet. So it must have been Tibetan monks, then. Tibetan monks, So he said,
Although he's kind of in exile, isn't he? Because the Chinese have taken over Tibet.
That's right. Yeah, the Chinese don't like Tibet too much because they rebel.
Yes, right.
So I think they try to close down
all every now and again, one sets fire to themselves.
Yeah, that's right. They do that. Poor Petrov themselves, which is a horrible way to die.
Must be awful. Must be awful. You feeling all right there?
Excuse me, it's summer hay fever.
There's
no sign of that
fly, by the way. Last time we were here.
No, we had a lot of...
A lot of people were quite...
A lot of correspondence
quite
about the fly.
I had to listen to it, actually. Quite a lot of people quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, they did.
Trying to swat a fly.
They did. Anyway, he said, Dolly, I'm still as ready as ever.
Dolly.
But how do you manage without sex? So the Dalai Lama apparently responded to this, you know, filthy inquiry, you know. And Dalai Lama is the most spiritual man on earth.
It's Dalai Lama.
Spiritual man on earth. And doesn't think about,
you read the Dalai Mail?
About, you know, godly... what sort of pleasures?
Horizontal,
pleasures of the flesh.
Horizontal refreshment.
Pleasures of the flesh and all that. He said, through his translator... his translator then cut in and said... Nobody asks Holiness questions like that.
Was he Japanese?
well, no. I mean, that's sort of far
reach. Fucking translator. Japanese.
Banzai. Nobody asks Holiness questions like that. But the Dalai Lama replied.
Okay.
So God knows why he's got a fucking interpreter. It's the Dalai Lama.
Well, he speaks in perfect English.
The Dalai Lama.
He spends half his life in Britain.
Yeah, he does, yeah. The Dalai Lama says... I do sometimes think of a beautiful woman, and then I chant my mantras in a cold shower. So
in a cold shower?
I mean, that's what a load of bollocks. You know, Brian Blessed is trying to tell us that I can reveal the Dalai Lama takes cold showers all the time because he gets an erection when he's thinking of a...
I don't want to think of the Dalai Lama with an erection, to be honest.
You know, when the Dalai Lama's singing a beautiful woman and all that. It's a load of bollocks. I mean, Brian Blessed first appeared in Zed Cars.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's Hampton's theme tune.
Fancy Smith, wasn't it?
That's right.
God.
And then he's made so many outrageous claims ever since.
The other great film he was in was Flash Gordon, wasn't he?
Well, do you know what he does now?
Gordon's alive!
Yeah.
That was his famous phrase.
Do you know what he does now?
What?
Whenever he's interviewed or anything, he says, when I walk down the streets of London, 30 times a day, people shout out to me, oh, Brian, please say it! And you know what they mean?
Yeah.
I have to say, Gordon's alive!
Yeah.
He said, People know me for that all around the world. It's true. I fucking don't. Do you?
Well, you haven't seen Flash Gordon. No. It's actually quite a good film.
Yeah.
Quite a good bad film.
Yeah, but it's not...
He's in charge of the Hawkmen in that film. He's in charge of the Hawkmen, who are men
Gordon's
with...
alive!
Yeah. He's the Hawkmen wear wings on their backs, right?
Yeah.
And they fly around in sort of formation.
But what I'm saying is, do you remember years and years ago when we were kids, the first ever comedy show that came over from America was the Rowan and something...
Rowan and Martin's Laughing.
Rowan Martin's... Loving.
Yeah.
There was a lady in that called Judy somebody, was it?
Well, do you know, was that not the place where Goldie Hawn started?
Goldie Hawn started there, definitely. Yeah. And her line was, "Sack it to me." And that we never heard that expression in England before.
No.
She came to England for the first time on a promotional tour.
It was quite a zany show, though. Actually.
It was quite a zany show. And as she got to Heathrow, everybody said, "Oh, Judy, sack it to me, sack it to me." And she spent a whole time in Britain saying, "Sack it to me," because everybody asked her to.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Brian Blessed walks down the streets of London and people say, "Oh, just say it, Brian."
They probably do,
Gordon's
actually.
Alive.
I mean, don't forget, I mean, when you and I walk down the street, we get recognised. Yeah. I mean, Brian Blessed probably gets double or triple the
Excuse
amount
me,
of recognition
that was my hay fever,
we get.
Which is
I mean,
a
I was
problem.
In Oxford Street the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And a cab driver shouted out the window to me, gave me a wave. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they do sometimes, yeah.
They do.
What's quite exciting is this week we're going to be down in Fleet Street, aren't we?
We are going to film some stuff in Fleet Street.
Bit of a tour in Fleet Street.
Well, we're in the process of considering, as part of our Too Much TV scenario.
Yes.
Not just, of course, if you haven't signed up yet. By the way, you should. It's called thetwomites.tv.
That's right.
It's only $2.99 a month. It's very well worth
Less than the price of a pint.
Less than the price of a pint.
Blado in motto.
That, you get all sorts of videos. And
yeah, you do.
We're going to do some audio content as well.
But
also, we're thinking of doing little mini documentaries.
We are.
Right, which will not just be for the use of our exclusive app, which
that's
we've now got almost developed to a very fine point.
Yes, that's
but
right.
But we're actually thinking about like doing proper TV shows.
Oh, yeah,
that would be kind of like half an hour.
Oh, we'll do all of those.
You know, like it's a proper documentary about Fleet Street.
And
so we're going to be in a pub or two.
Indeed. But
in Fleet Street.
But later on, we might even start thinking about you doing your recipes live. Now, talking about recipes, I want
that's
to talk about
something
food.
Else we're going to do,
yeah. Yeah, I want to talk about food,
yeah,
okay? Households in Britain throw away £15 billion of good food a year.
Yes.
£15 billion of food is thrown. I mean, in this day and age, when, you know, we can transport signals around the world to talk to someone on a mobile phone in Australia easily.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like easily.
Yeah.
We can do things like we can convert, you know, waste into biofuels and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Why can't we make sure that the countries in the world where people are starving can take advantage of £15 billion worth of food in the West, which is thrown away?
Well, there's a very simple answer.
Freeze it and take it out there.
How can you can't freeze it and take it out there?
Of course you can.
No, you can't.
Yes, you
can. We've had this conversation before. You can't take something on a bloody great big oil tanker, which has effectively been converted into a giant food freezer, so that you can then get to the other side of the world, take it out of the container, unfreeze it,
you can.
And feed it to someone.
You can.
No, you can't.
You can. A lot of the fruit we eat these days, we know this, apples and things from Australia, New Zealand, some of them are months old because they're frozen, then unfrozen.
Well,
that's what happens.
Old. Yeah, I know, but you can't just deliver the food to people who can't afford to pay for it, can you?
I mean,
what on earth are the food companies going to do if they're being asked
to government give it... should pay for it.
Why?
Saudi Arabia should pay for it.
Pay for it.
Saudi Arabia's loads of money, all the money in the world. The price of oil is going up again.
Yeah.
The price of petrol's going up. Use some of that vast wealth Saudi Arabia's
got
to take food from the Western world to the poor people in the third world, developing
mad?
Countries.
Have you gone bonkers?
No, no.
I mean, you don't care about people in the
I do care. I care about these people.
Well, why don't you send them some money?
Well, where would I send it?
Well, where would you send the food?
Hang on. You send the food to countries that are starving. There's
no.
Countries in Africa which
are
starving. You do.
Absolute rubbish.
Send it to Ethiopia.
All right. So
why
where?
Do you think we made Band-Aid?
What
because
are you
people
do?
There are starving.
Yeah, why do you think they're
Who's
still starving?
Who's going to tell you now? It's too late.
What's that?
That's the song from Band-Aid.
Band-Aid's a Christmas song.
Who's going to tell you? Oh, well, you know the one I'm talking about. You know, the Bob Geldof one. Who's going to tell you now?
No, you're singing
it's
something completely
late.
Different.
I'm
it's
not,
too late.
No, no.
That's the who's cars. Gonna who's going to drive you
that's,
home?
That's right. Who's going to drive
that's
you home?
That's the fucking thing to do with Band-Aid.
It is. That was the Band-Aid
no,
song.
No, it wasn't. That's the cars.
It was.
Rick,
anyway.
It's Rick
I'm
Ocasek.
Delighted.
It's Rick Ocasek, who was married to that Pauline Poroskova, the Eastern European
Pauline
model.
Pauline Poroskova?
Pauline Poroskova, who's in that video.
Sounds like a made-up name.
No, it's not
anyway,
a made-up name.
Delighted to say
Band-Aid was Do They Know It's Christmas. That was the fucking song.
Oh, yeah,
song.
But that was the Christmas one. But this was
they
the original one.
No, it wasn't.
This came first. This was
no.
the Wembley one.
Rubbish.
It was. I know what I'm doing.
No, you don't know what you're doing.
Now, listen.
I know what I'm doing.
I know what I'm doing.
I know
now,
where I'm going.
Just to finish on this, I'm
no
delighted to tell
dance.
You.
No fancy dance.
No fancy dance round here.
Has he got
Tesco
a job yet, by the way?
I don't think so.
Hey, what about Unai Emery? Unai Emery is the new boss of Arsenal.
I've got thoughts on that.
I told you that was going to happen. You didn't believe me.
No, you didn't. Yeah, now then, Tesco have announced that they're going to scrap the best before dates on fruit and vegetables, yes. Okay?
Yeah, but you have to be pretty stupid, right? To pay any attention to those. People are apparently confused between best before and used by.
Yeah, I know.
Well, they'd have to be pretty thick, wouldn't they?
Well, the thing is, that, you know, I sometimes have bananas at home, and the way I can tell whether I want to eat them or not is how brown the yellow skin's gone.
How now, brown cow.
And actually, when it's gone brown, I peel the skin off, and they are at their ripest and most delicate.
Really?
But by this time, supermarkets have thrown them away.
They've turned into that kind of pasty one.
No.
Because I like a banana to be firm.
No, I know exactly.
I don't like it to be too soft.
No, I know exactly the moment a banana should be eaten, and I then put it in my porridge.
Do you?
Okay, yeah, because I love...
Do you mash it up?
No, I just slice it thinly and put it in the porridge, you know. Let the wind blow high, let the wind blow low. Now...
I didn't know you ate porridge. How do you eat your porridge?
I eat my porridge with boiled milk.
Boiled milk.
I boil the milk,
right,
and I never let the milk get over the top of the pan because I put a piece of glass in the bottom of the pan.
What?
That keeps it from boiling over.
Well, a piece of glass.
No, I've got a glass disc. Oh. It's an anti.
Why have you got a glass disc?
It's an anti milk boiling pan device. Seriously, yeah. And if you
where
put that in,
where did you get that from?
I got it from the shop that sells.
Is that
them,
what
you
they
know
call
what I mean?
It? What the anti. Yeah, milk it is. Boiling device shop.
Yes. Well, no. Where is not that? The shop, obviously, but it's I'm getting a new set of pans because my sausage pan has got now too invigorated with grease, so I've thrown it away.
Well, why don't you clean it?
Well, I clean it every week, but no matter how often you clean a pan, grease still sticks.
I thought you liked to use the sausage grease for your bacon butties.
No. I've got
You can't just throw away a pan.
I'm throwing
You're talking
pan.
About
I've thrown
how much food we throw away. You're throwing away perfectly good sauce pans because you don't want to clean them.
I have a separate bacon pan. I have a separate
bacon.
Sausage pan.
Right.
I have a separate tomato pan because that makes terrible...
do you know what I had
that makes
at
terrible,
the weekend?
A terrible mess, the tomato pan.
Do you know
pan?
What I had at the weekend? I'm thinking of getting one, actually.
Yes.
Went to stay with a friend, right?
Yes.
Near Poosticks Bridge Kent.
Oh, all right.
And she had the most amazing pizza maker you've ever seen. You
really?
Should get one.
Really?
Because, I mean, you have to make your own pizza dough.
Where'd you get the dough from?
You make it. I mean, you could probably buy it if you wish to. It's very easy to make pizza dough. All you need is...
So how much does a pizza machine cost?
I think about 100 quid.
Wow, I'm going to get one.
Yeah,
I'll get two.
No, but listen, you don't need two.
Yeah, I'll get
but
two.
I'll tell you what's great about it, right? It looks a bit like, you know those kind of very expensive food mixers that come in a sort of red colour. Have you seen those?
Well, probably.
You know, they've got the whirring thing that goes around. They've got the bucket and all that.
Yeah.
Similar to that. KitchenAid, I think they're called.
Right, yeah.
This thing has got a round... it sits on three legs.
Yes.
It's got a round top. You lift the lid open.
Right.
And inside the lid is an element.
Wow.
Which is what cooks the pizza.
Wow.
Right? On the bottom level is just a piece of stone.
Right.
So you put the
stone
the pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah, you put the stone. It's like a stone-baked pizza.
Yeah.
You put the pizza in. You put anything you want on it.
Great.
You could put, you know...
sounds good to me.
Pepperoni, you can put anything you like.
I have on mine mushroom, bacon, pineapple.
I thought you liked ham and pineapple.
And ham.
Ham and bacon.
Yeah.
Well, you can do all that. And it cooks it, I kid you not, in about 5 minutes.
Love it. I'm going
to get really
one.
Good. They're really good.
Going to get one, definitely.
And you can probably buy the pizza dough, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sure you
or
can.
Or pizza bases, you know what I mean?
Okay, I'm sure.
So that's very good. Have we run out of time already?
Yeah.
Is it that time?
Well, you talk too much garbage.
No, I've been giving you useful information.
Don't
but we'll talk some
me,
more
pal.
About food coming up in the next On The Record. We are the two mics. This is, of course, On The Record.
Hey. So there was one time and I got close to a lady who worked at the Mirror, right? Mm.
When you say got close?
Yes, yes.
What do you mean?
Pretty close.
You mean you had an affair with her?
Yes, that's right.
Was she a secretary?
No, she wasn't. She was a reporter on the Sunday Mirror. And she's a lovely girl with blonde hair. I can't remember her name.
You can't remember her name?
No. But believe it or not...
That's not very nice.
Believe it or not...
Do you think she remembers your name?
Yeah, she would remember my name, yeah. But we met on a facility trip to British Honduras.
That's why you went on those trips, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right.
To try and get your leg out.
Yeah, there was a lot of it, yeah.
Was that the one you went on Concorde on?
There was one I went on Concorde on, you're absolutely right, yeah. And Concorde was parked there for 3 days on the landing strip in British Honduras.
How about her landing strip?
I'm not going to respond to smutty, innuendos like that. However, we did get close, right?
Yeah.
And it was quite romantic,
but on
really.
That trip?
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You mean
it hadn't
happened before?
It hadn't happened before.
Really?
I hadn't met her before.
She must have been drinking.
And as we were going towards the Napoleonic Fort, you know, the waves were getting bigger and bigger and the boat was tossing around.
Right.
So when we got up to the edge of the fort, you have to come in across the jetty and then grab the iron ladder which you have to climb to get on. Anyway, guy tried it three times. The third time, the boat raised up on a wave, smashed. My brother-in-law,
hasn't
you know,
it got like a proper stairwell?
No, no. My brother-in-law, who was, you know, seasick and going, you know, nearly fell overboard.
Dear God.
It was amazing. And
that's awful.
Had to turn around and come back. Yeah, yeah. So I never got onto the
Napoleonic
Fort. But
so you still got the thing to use then?
It's been used this week now. I made sure the people have used it. You know, so that's okay. If I were you, Roy, I'd shut the fuck up.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.